This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run on Wednesday, the 23rd of February. I'm Shazana, together with Xiaoning. For now, though, we are turning our attention to the issue of carbon tax. A reminder that the International Panel of Climate Change, or IPCC, released a report last August that said that unequivocally human activity is driving climate change. And this report also warned that the Earth will exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming within the next 20 to 30 years unless we decarbonize. And one tool that's been widely used to speed decarbonization is carbon pricing or carbon tax.
So carbon pricing has already been structured in various forms across the world, including Singapore, Japan, and Indonesia. But these schemes cover a limited percentage of carbon emissions, and their pricing ranges widely, creating an almost uneven playing field. Nonetheless, carbon pricing remains a topic of great importance amongst policymakers, with Singapore recently hiking carbon tax by fivefold to 50 to 80 Singapore dollars per ton of emission, as announced in their recent budget. So climate change is real. So how will carbon tax be able to improve the global environmental code rate situation that we are in right now?
So for some insights into how carbon tax works, we speak to Howie Lee, economist at OCBC Bank in Singapore. Howie, good morning. Help us understand the mechanisms involved in actually setting a carbon tax. How do companies and governments track carbon emissions and then put a price on carbon?
Well, there are two main kinds of emissions. We call them scope 1 and scope 2. There is scope 3, but that is harder to measure. Scope 1 is essentially if you are a direct emitter of carbon emissions. In other words, you own a power plant or you have a direct power source in which you have to burn fossil fuels. You are called a Scope 1 emission. Scope 2 emission, simply speaking, is actually the electricity that you consume. So for Scope 1 emissions, those are actually easy to measure. You just have to put a sensor wherever your output of emissions is, you get the idea of how much you are putting out. And then for Scope 2 emissions, is typically your power bill. Then you have an idea of how much Scope 2 emissions that you are having. So for most companies out there, if you are not a power plant, if you are not a big factory operator that requires your own power source, you are probably just in the Scope 2 emissions portion. And for most of Asia right now, most of the carbon tax or even the carbon compliance market trading are directed at Scope 1 emissions.
So, Howie, could you give us an example of any country that has implemented a carbon tax? How is it enforced, and perhaps what are the challenges?
So if you were to move from the West to the East, it becomes a starkly different picture. In the West, it's been very developed. They have carbon taxes. They have carbon compliance markets, what we call ETS markets, emissions trading scheme markets. Right. So in addition to capping price, which is your carbon tax, you have a capping of quantity, which is your ETS market. Those are very pronounced in Europe, very pronounced in certain parts of the US, like California, for example, very pronounced in Canada. However, as you start to shift east, then the picture becomes lesser. Not many in Asia actually do have a carbon tax, and most don't have an ETS market, with the exception of South Korea and China and Japan, but that's just limited to Tokyo. So I think it first starts off with having a national mandate saying, okay, we want to cap emissions and we want to put a price on carbon for a better future. And then it kicks off some kind of battle of political wheels, if you would call it that way. And then that's when we get a carbon market in place.
And one question, Howie. Carbon tax will make fossil fuels and hence production overall more expensive, right? So wouldn't a carbon tax consequently place more burden on households and consumers, especially those with low incomes?
You are right. So as much as possible, from what we are seeing right now, most countries would try to impose the carbon tax as high upstream as possible. So in other words, let's say a tin of milk powder, for example, they try to tax the production of milk as high upstream as possible. So they try not to put the carbon tax on the processor, but rather on the production of milk itself. Right? That's an example. So as you start to drift downwards, the sharing of the burden of the carbon cost becomes lesser and lesser, such that when it reaches the end consumer, you do feel the pinch, but not as much as high upstream as where the carbon tax is placed. And I think that is done for a very major reason. That's because the emissions are mostly done upstream, and it places the responsibility and the burden of upstream producers to try and cut down as much as possible. Now, of course, you will ask, no, hey, if the downstream guys are not going to feel it, then they'll just operate as per normal, isn't it? And I think that's where the education comes into play, you know, the understanding that carbon, a decarbonized future affects everyone, not just the upstream producers. And secondly, the idea that at some stage when carbon rates are high enough and you force emitters to look for cleaner alternatives, everybody has to bear the cost. Like, so I think it's a price that everybody has to pay to avoid an existential crisis.
But many companies have used tax avoidance methods. I mean, how will carbon tax be different?
Well, there's some controversy regarding that. But from what we have been seeing, as the market matures and evolves more, those policies become less. So a typical carbon market or a carbon tax system evolves like that. First, it tends to be low to give companies time to adjust. And that's where you have that carbon avoidance kind of loopholes coming in. And then as the market matures, they will try to raise that carbon price because the one-time shock has already been fully absorbed into the system and they feel comfortable pushing it higher. And then there will come a point where probably there will be a lot of speculation with an active trading market. And then the government will tend to step in and try to control and cap the price of how high carbon can go in the short term. So just so that, you know, you do not overburden these producers or you don't incentivize the wrong things like excessive planting of forests in an economy that doesn't that requires more roads and bridges to be built instead. So I see where you are coming from, but it's a natural evolvement of any carbon regime. Right? First, you start off with a loosely defined framework, but when you reach the stage of, let's say, the European market right now, those are actually have very minimal leakage at this point.
Howie, what are the challenges for countries looking to impose a carbon tax like Malaysia?
Well, it's always the political will because anything that comes with cost will cost votes. So that's something that most governments are mindful about. And then there is the shifting of mindset on the consumer front, understanding why they have to pay more for a plastic bag they are taking from the supermarket or from that Tupperware that you are buying when you are out there buying food. Then, of course, having to push back against lobbying from the manufacturers who claim that it's unfair on them to be bearing the cost. So all those things have to be addressed. But eventually, I think the solution would be to find a clean energy alternative. Right. So instead of just blindly putting a price on carbon, you find a clean alternative like hydrogen fuels or solar-powered cells that would solve the problem for everyone at a competitive price. And I think that will come in the long run when carbon prices are high enough, and then that would force some kind of technology breakthrough. So if you would, to come and put things in their place.
Howie, let's talk about impact, because in 2024, Singapore's carbon tax will increase by fivefold. So how will companies in Singapore be affected financially, and how are they going to respond to this?
I think your question would be, how much of that cost would filter down to households and to general consumer prices in general? And to that question, I think that it is probably coming. I don't think it's a result of us raising carbon taxes, because for Singapore, we are importing most of our food and raw necessities anyway, right? Energy, food, water from EU. So on that front, the cost of import related to carbon decarbonization prices would be the cost of what the carbon policies are from these countries. And given that we import a wide array of everything from everywhere in the world, we are subjected to some carbon tax one way or another. Rather, whatever we have imposed on our own carbon taxes, those are actually quite limited to the very big facilities. Those who are emitting more than 25,000 tons of carbon dioxide equivalents a year, and those tend to be for the export market. Those are your refiners, your petrochemicals, your semiconductor firms, your biochemical factories. Those are for the export market. They do not filter into our domestic market that much. So if you're asking whether is the increase in price on our end is the result of our carbon tax, no. But it will increase anyway because there is a growing movement in terms of raising carbon taxes globally.
Howie, what about examples of how governments use the revenue of carbon taxes? Can governments use that to reduce the burden of the people?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think as far as Singapore is concerned, the minister did say that any extra collection in revenue would not actually go to the coffers of our budget, but rather is going into investment into looking for cleaner alternatives that would be unique to Singapore's situation. And I think that's how carbon taxes should be used. It should not be collecting it for the sake of other forms of spending, whether it be public or whether it be for general trade improvements. And I think Singapore has set that precedent, has set that footing where it will want to invest that kind of money into looking for clean alternatives. There are many avenues to invest that kind of money. Hydrogen is up and coming. It is one of the most exciting alternative to fossil fuels that we have been talking about recently now. And there are other traditional, what I call intermediary decarbonization fuels, like your biofuels, your very established renewables, like your hydro, nuclear, although I know that it's not very well received globally. Those money should be going in there to bring down the cost of such technology, such that it's made viable for the general population instead of moving it around and putting it in general expenditure means.
Howie, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Howie Lee, economist at OCBC Bank in Singapore, talking to us about how carbon taxes work and the kinds of implications this could have for businesses and consumers, but ultimately underlining that this is a trend that most of the world is progressing towards.
Yeah, but I'm curious, how is Malaysia going to implement carbon tax, right? Because it is mentioned in the 12th Malaysia Plan, and we are supposed to be a carbon neutral country at earliest by 2050. So we are supposed to have some form of, I guess, policy, but to date, I have not seen anything about it. And I'm just curious, is it complicated by the fact that we are actually among the countries in ASEAN, a net energy exporter? How does it really all then work out?
That's a very good point. I think that makes sense that they're talking about this, debating about this, because our shift to renewable energy also is fairly nascent, I believe. Mm. It's still it's quite small still. I think we still have a ways to grow before it can actually produce the bulk of the energy consumption that is required.
Yeah. So in addition to carbon tax in our goals to be carbon neutral, we are supposed to also have a carbon emissions trading system. And this is the interaction between market supply and demand. So that will determine the carbon price. It's supposed to be also run by the Ministry of Environment and Water, but also no news on this. So if we could have some clarity, I think that would be good. And then maybe, you know why, if you know what the carbon tax is going to be like as a corporate, you can start factoring that into your assumptions, making it easier for you to do business in the future.
Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.